This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, and you can find out more at the website, allbookhavenbooks.com. I have mentioned or written about it before, but want to go more in depth on the topic of any kind of arts. Well, music is different. painting is different, but the verbally communicative arts, how you best reach people, which is, I don't know, I kind of think that's an odd phrase, reach, how do I reach people? But it's somehow, it's a form of communication, so you're interacting and you want to, as that old commercial was like, reach out and touch someone in an emotional way. So the topic is typically like information versus emotion. Because overall, I have heard people say, and I generally agree, that what really touches or changes somebody the most is the emotional. So you appeal to that rather than the informational and the factoids. But I don't fully agree with that. So that's some of what I'm talking about this. And emotional can be used on the flip side too, because many a politician uses the, you know, my family, when I was growing up, and my great-grandfather or my parents, they worked 12-hour, 14-hour days. You know, they use that emotional pitch to appeal to people for the votes. But it's just, you know, it's a con job, really, in the bigger picture. And then you have televangelists and other kinds of preachers or people that speak in very in ways that are very emotionally stirring, and it can sway a lot of people. But does it mean it's accurate? That's a question. So I think the emotions cut both ways, and information, depending if it's accurate, can cut both ways too. That's used against things. What's the truth is the big topic nowadays. Truth versus propaganda, misinformation, disinformation. Case in point, October 7th, the supposed Hamas infiltration, which the results were sad and horrific, but that information of the way the atrocities were presented was meant, so the information was used to sway people emotionally. So that's one I hadn't thought about till just mentioning about how the information is used to sway people emotionally. So there, you know, there was talk of mangled bodies and you know, the horrors and babies burnt and babies tortured and all kinds of stuff. You know, it turns out more recently in the news, reports that Israel is burning people in tents and starving people. There are dogs in Gaza eating dead bodies. I mean, that's not in the news. And if you don't notice the difference in what they put out as the info emotional to persuade you and what they do put out, then you're missing the way that things are manipulated. You're missing, as I reviewed the book a while ago by Joost Mierlo, The Rape of the Mind, The Psychology of Thought Control, Menticide, and Brainwashing. You're being played by both information and emotion. So one example I want to give of how information, I tend to be more, I think I'm personally more swayed by information than the average person. But here's an art. I want to present this in a kind of stark way. Okay, to make my point, because, and a lot of this is persuasive. I think about that in my writing, that some of it is just pure, like just a poem comes to me and it's a pure, sort of quote unquote pure poem. But a lot of times it is, I'm thinking about, or when I edit, or specifically thinking about, how do I use this to persuade people? How do I reach people? If I have a point I'm trying to make or something that outrages me and I want to convince people otherwise, how do I use the art form to persuade people? You know, sometimes too heavy-handed pushes people away. Sometimes too heavy-handed stirs people. Sometimes subtle reaches people. Sometimes too subtle doesn't reach people. I've had people who give me the thumbs up on a generic anti-war pro-peace poem or writing, but then if I point the fingers at specific countries or people, there's barely a mention. It's like it challenges their belief system or their allegiance or their framework. You know, sometimes people believe in the saving our democracy. So if you point a finger at anti-war, it's okay. But if you point a finger at the U.S. sending bajillions of dollars to other countries for war, then that doesn't get the thumbs up. So it's a tangled situation. But here's my example. Okay, did you hear about a new restaurant that opened up, you know, nearby? And let's just say the pizza is great. It's some of the best pizza ever. But oh, by the way, the owner, it's been reported that in his lifetime thus far, he's killed 100 people. The pizza is great. Do you want to go? Probably you won't go. I mean, you know, wherever you go to eat, whatever you buy and shop, you don't really know, you know, aside from people that work at stores and they get, you know, background checked, whatever. You don't know what's really going on. As long as it's a good product and this and that, hey, that's the way capitalism works. But the point here is, and I'm going to connect this to the point, is that an article that was at Global Research, maybe from Popular Resistance and Global Research, November 2015, this is the headline. Now, you'd have to study the article to see where they get the stats from and how much is accurate and how much is, you know, maybe whatever, maybe fudged a little, I don't know, but the list is long and persuasive. The headline, this is an article by James A. Lucas and Professor Mikhail Chesedovsky. The U.S., this is the title, the U.S. has killed more than 20 million people in 37 victim nations since World War II. Astounding, astounding stat. And to add to the article mentioning 20 million people killed since World War II from empires' efforts around the world, this is part of, historically, the continuing thread of what has been heard John Trudell call the virus that came over on the ships with Columbus and those, the colonists, because I've heard 95 to 97.5% of the native peoples here that were here were wiped out. The article, and it goes on to explain, and it gives victim nation, 37 victim nations, alphabetically, Afghanistan, Angola, Bangladesh, Bolivia. It goes on and on. Down to Pakistan, Vietnam, Yugoslavia, William Blum. There's a lot of quotes. William Blum was one of the best. You can check out his books at keeping up with these horrific statistics, these horrific but important statistics. So here's numbers and statistics to convince somebody that because this topic is not addressed, that basically the whole you know, Trump versus Kamala thing is basically what I now call hypnotainment. It's hypnotic and entertaining people, but they won't touch the deeper stuff. So information or emotion, which sways more? And then a third option is in Rape of the Mind, in the beginning of the Rape of the Mind book, which the other day I picked up to look at while thinking about this topic, and I reminded myself, I was like, oh yeah, because I get very, I get annoyed and frustrated, not infrequently, at, you know, at whether talking to someone or lack of responses or responses that don't address the topic at certain things that I find horrific and atrocity and, you know, tug on the emotional strings, and whether it's anger or sad or whatever. And when people just kind of shrug it off, that I have to say, well, why isn't the emotional output that I have done, why doesn't that convince them? Well, why doesn't the information I presented to them, why doesn't that convince them? But the reason given in Mirlu's book is trauma. And this is in the introduction by Jean-Paul Leonard, and he's talking about Pavlov. We all know the Pavlovian repetitive drills, the Pavlovian bell, which, you know, you just listen to TV advertisements, and that's Pavlov. But the other one is the traumatic. Two kinds of conditioning, the repetitive and the traumatic. And one thing to add to the people learning through trauma, which is not even all the time, at least I have seen examples where I saw something maybe on the news or somebody went through what would be easily defined as a traumatic experience, but it did not change their point of view, which got me to think next lifetime or whenever. So yeah, just adding that. And here, by the way, is Dr. Mirlu says, the best defense against giving in to coercion is to know what principles they are trying to use and to outwit them. To know what principles they are trying to use and to outwit them. Human herd instinct, fear of ridicule for being different. There's all kinds of reasons in here. So, this refers to 9/11, the trauma that shocked people out of their apathy about the Middle East. In a state of intense emotion, people are more suggestible. That's a key thing, again, to watch out for the news propaganda. In a state of intense emotion, people are more suggestible. New ideas can be implanted that will remain long afterwards in spite of repeated evidence to the contrary. So even though the alleged hijackers were Saudis, the shock of 9/11 could be used to mobilize for war on a different Arab country, Iraq. And you read that and you say that's idiotic. You know, person A did it, but we're going after person B. It's idiotic. But look what's happened. Trillions of dollars and millions, like about a million lives killed. The land and air and water polluted because of the global war of terror based on a shell game. This introduction, this preface is by Jean-Paul Leonard. Then all the lesser terror alerts, false alerts of suspects, the harassment at airports, those are bits of repetitive conditioning, like booster shots to maintain the message. It's well known, it's been shown in experiments, that people are skeptical to new ideas, but once they accept one, it is hard to get them to change it, even in the light of new evidence. So I realized why we could not get through to people with our evidence, in bold. In the text, it's in bold. People are not logical and open-minded. Short of a traumatic event, human beings simply will not accept new information that doesn't fit into their bold worldview. I'll read that again. So I realized why we could not get through to people with our evidence. People are not logical and open-minded. Short of a traumatic event, human beings simply will not accept new information that doesn't fit into their worldview. So I will qualify that.
The qualification I would add is that, the book talking about how open-minded or closed-minded people are, they don't change, but obviously that's relative to the certain type of person. I would say that I haven't done a study, but with the book, overall, yeah, people change when they change. So it's a challenging thing.
And then he also says, turning your worldview upside down is a traumatic event itself. People will go to great lengths to avoid that. So it reinforces the repetitive conditioning. I've had people say literally when faced with unsettling information, I don't want to go there. If you push them hard enough, they will abandon their cherished facade of open-mindedness in order to escape the uncomfortable truth. Of course, the 9/11 truth narrative is quite a bit more terrifying than the 9/11 myth. People who have too much invested in the official world can't deal with it. I haven't found any silver bullet to get past this, but it might be worth trying in the introduction to a book or video presenting an unpopular viewpoint to explain this principle of selective receptiveness, how our mind filters information according to its worldview, even when we think we are fair and open-minded.
So that's what I wanted to highlight, because that makes me feel like, ironically, that made me feel really good because the amount of energy that I have spent and fret about, why this response? Why not that response? And I'll continue to do some of that. But here it's telling me, don't worry about that. You can only do so much as an artist or a writer. You put it out there, but you literally can't change, maybe it's persuasive enough. You can change people that way. But But it's a two-way street, and the person has to be open and ready to change. So that's the key point that this Mirlu book is making, that I think a lot of writers and a lot of people out in the news and videos and Substack posts, they believe or are convinced so strongly in their views and opinions, and they want to persuade other people. So depending on who's doing the persuading, that's wonderful. Yet, I think for me, personally, it helps to remember I don't have to fret because I can only do so much and I can't control other people. So that makes me feel like, hey, I can take a little vacation in my mind from all that stuff and just not worry about it and focus my attention on whatever, on the moment or what I think is the best tact or just reviewing how I want to, you know, bring my point across or how I want to present what I want to present. An example is after having written three poetic nonfiction books with a lot of information and footnotes and hard-hitting examples, suddenly I'm working on short stories and a novella for the next book, and I'll say right now, probably nobody will remember by the time the book comes out, but part of it, along with wanting to just write good stories and that people learn and appreciate and helps them in their personal lives and caring for the earth and their local habitats and the people around them, I'm also slipping in some little bits of persuasive information that I have, you know, tried with the hammer, and now I'm trying with the feather duster. I want to just slide the little bit of information in, because sometimes all it takes is one little bit of information or one little tweak of the motion. So whatever your project is, if you're working on something or in your daily life with people, just, you know, realize that it can, different things work, and I don't think there's one right answer, but in general, I will say that the emotional hook is still probably the tops, but that does not preclude other ones, and also that statistics, I think the divide, sort of like the yin yang, the day and night are not polar opposites, they're intertwined. In a similar way that information is laden with emotion. So if you have the information that the U.S. Empire has killed 20 million people since World War II, that information is laced. If you probe it, you will find out of the horror and the sadness and the terror and all the emotions behind it. So the emotion, the info can be like the cover to the book, but the emotion is in there. So, it's a mixed bag, and I think all those examples help at different levels. So, as I heard a Buddhist or Tibetan guy, meditator guy, once say, "May you have a clean, clear, coherent mind and heart." Thank you for listening. Be well.